The information contained in this episode is for informational purposes only. No material is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
We need a revolution. There's only one solution.
Hello and welcome to the revolution, the peaceful health revolution. And this is the Liberty Hour on An Informed Life Radio. I'm your host, Bernadette Pager. The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KKNW or CHDTV. And we're not giving medical or legal advice. We're just giving you good information so that that discussion can happen. This dialogue is what makes freedom free. Dialogue, informed consent, everybody just getting ideas out there, and truth always bubbles to the top, you know? So I'm so excited in this hour to before I move on, I got to remind everybody that the only reason this hour is on the air is because of the members of Informed Choice Washington, informedchoicewa.org. Member donations are all that pays for this. We don't take any outside funding, no products, nothing. It's just members who really believe in informed consent and medical freedom. And my favorite thing to say that turns some people in public health is their faces red. I believe in scientific integrity and public health policy. So somebody's probably laughing. Bob, I don't know if you remember, I told you that story in the past before. I just squirreled. So I'm going to bring her on. Dr. Kelly Victory, come on to the stage here because I'm squirreling already. You know, I didn't get enough sleep last night and I squirrel more when I don't get enough sleep. So I can't even remember what I was going to squirrel about, but welcome to the show, Dr. Kelly.
Thanks so much for having me, Bernadette. I'm really looking forward to the conversation.
Me too. I'm going to bring on to the beginning and they're going to pop in and out as needed because we got a lovely full house today. We've got Bob Reynolds and Dr. Javier Figueroa, my sometimes co-host that more and more I'm kind of putting him in the hot seat so that be taking a little bit more charge as we move forward and doing this great show that hopefully will be on for many, many years to come. I love how it has grown and changed over the years, getting a little bit more professional, but you know, it's always pretty much down to earth and real conversation, isn't it? Yeah, it's good.
Absolutely.
So I probably forgot something because I am squirreling, but let's get on to our guest here. So Dr. Kelly Victory has got 30 or more years of trauma and emergency medicine experience. But why I heard of her and so many others out there have heard of her is because during the whole pandemic, she had the personal courage to stand up and speak out when she saw things that were unethical and unscientific being put forward. And for that, she's my hero. She joins the rank of heroes. So thank you, Kelly, for that. Have you always been somebody who stood up and spoke out for, you know, against injustice?
Yes, Bernadette, for right or wrong, I am, I think, fundamentally a heat-seeking missile. I can't stand by and keep my mouth shut. As you said, I'm a trauma and emergency physician by training. I have a specialty in disaster preparedness and the medical management of mass casualty. But when the pandemic, and I've spent the better part of the last couple of decades also heavily immersed in public health. So when the pandemic came along, very early on, I knew that something was awry. And I sort of, the red flags went up and I said, whoa, 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 what are we doing here? And started speaking out early in 2020. It was really the end of February when I made my first post that got me kicked off of Twitter, where I said that this is clearly a lab manipulated virus, not mm-hmm. naturally occurring. And then it kind of went from there. And I did point out very vocally the issues that I found early on with regard to this wearing masks to stop the spread of respiratory virus. So, you know, something we've known for decades doesn't work. I pushed back early on this made-up concept of social distancing, an idea that's simply silly, to use the the easiest word. I talked about the dangers of lockdowns and the total idiocy of closing down schools when we knew early on, for example, that children were at such a de minimis risk from COVID as to be fundamentally indistinguishable from zero. I mean, they were not at risk. So I pointed these things out early on and was shocked at the pushback that I was getting, not only, by the way, from, you know, the social media platforms, which, you know, immediately shut me down, censored me, canceled me, you know, kicked me off, but from my own colleagues. And I became very aware that something nefarious was afoot. And that sort of was what started. And once I was aware that clearly we were in a crisis, an international crisis, and that we were being lied to by pretty much every available resource, public health resource, our own agencies, the FDA, the CDC, the NIH, certainly the WHO, the mainstream media, I felt obligated to continue to speak. And I suffered the slings and arrows for it, but I wouldn't do it any differently.
Exactly. I mean, that's how so many of the heroes feel. It's like, how could you not stand up? And yet so many people, they just have not been able to do it, but a growing number have. And you standing up and taking those slings and arrows, I guess you were just aptly named at birth, Kelly Victory. You know, you make it possible for others to stand up, because you've survived it. So many people that I've interviewed who have stood up, and they've lost some things professionally, they, and then even in their personal lives, but the way they feel in their heart and soul, they feel good. There's an inner calmness and joy even in knowing that you're standing in your truth and you're doing what you know to be right.
Yeah, one of my favorite quotes, and I've used it way before the pandemic, was in the words of John Milton, virtue untested is no virtue at all. Anybody can do what's right when it's easy, when there's nothing at stake. The question is, what do you do when there's everything at stake? And there were times when I questioned myself. I had to defend my own medical license seven different times during the pandemic in multiple states. And interestingly, not for anything having anything to do with the patient. It was always for things that I said on radio or television. Yeah. There were times it's debilitating, it's exhausting, it's demoralizing, it's expensive. And there were times where I thought, wow, you know, why am I out here? You know, am I just tipping windmills? But fortunately, as you said, there were a handful of others early on. There were, you know, the titans, people like Peter McCullough and Harvey Riesch and, you know, Jay Bhattacharya and others here in the, you know, who were willing to stand up. And together we started to sort of get the idea that we are not crazy. We are right. We know we're right. And the more that they came after us, you know, to use a military concept, you know, you take the most shrapnel when you are directly over the target. So we knew early on that we were right, and we were following truly the science. And the more, what was really interesting was that the more that they tried to censor people, the more you knew something was afoot. Because prior to this plandemic, as I think you rightly call it, debate, particularly debate amongst scientists, amongst physicians, was a cornerstone of medicine. I mean, that's where, you know, we all grew up and we all trained on robust, vigorous, sometimes, you know, heated debate. When all of a sudden you couldn't have that debate and the only narrative that was allowed, it was the one that was prescribed by the government, it became very clear that there was a problem and that they were hiding things. And I would go so far to say, and I'm happy to talk about any component of the pandemic or what's been happening over the past 4 years. But the reality is these are not, were not mistakes that my government made. These were lies my government told me. They knew the things that, they did that were wrong, whether it was masks, social distancing, lockdowns, the vaccine program, all of this. They knew in advance, they knew the same things that I knew, that these things were not going to work, that they were in fact harmful. Many of the abject lies we were told about the mRNA shots, I mean, are just unconscionable. We yes. have the receipts. We know that they knew, mm-hmm. you know, at the time that they were lying. So it's not, you cannot say what a lot of people would like, which is, well, gosh, if we knew then what we know now, you know, it was a novel virus, we didn't know, there was no way we could have known. Because as I've said from the beginning, I, Dr. Kelly Victory, wasn't saying the things beginning in early 2020 that I said, because I'm a really good guesser. I was saying the things that I said because this is what we've known for decades, and they know it too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you remind me a couple of things. I'm taking notes here because my brain's just going 1,000 directions. First of all, from the Plandemic film series, one of their trailers, I just love it, like goes black and you just see these white letters and it says, they tried to bury us. They didn't know we were seeds. So you, Kelly Victory, are a seed, right? I mean, you talk about the heart, what were you saying? The more they censor, the more we grow, the truth right. comes out, because that's what you see. And then the other thing is like, okay, you know, the lockdowns, the all the protocols that we saw, and the fact that an experimental shot was coming out and this and that, everything that happened is what in all these events, like event 201, mm-hmm. is that what I haven't thought about in a while?
Yeah.
But there was quite a few of them over the years, these events where global entities got together and they did tabletop exercises mm-hmm.
right.
to say what would happen if we had this global pandemic. But Kelly, answer me this. In all of these tabletop exercises, they saw all of these problems. And yet when supposedly the real thing happened, all of the problems that they predicted happened and they had no solutions for them. So what was the purpose of the tabletop exercise if it didn't help you avoid any of the problems you predicted would happen?
Right, because they were exactly because this was really about pushing a particular agenda, an agenda of control. And I believe one of the key pieces was their attempt to make mRNA a household word. They have long had huge interests in developing mRNA as a platform. And part of this pandemic and the mass vaccination program that was always intended to be launched, I believe, was to make people believe that mRNA is a very safe, highly tested, standardized platform that we can use for everything. It's good for everybody. It's good for kids. It's good for pregnant women. It's good for old people. It's good for everybody. There aren't any risks. We've done it for a long time, when that simply is not the case. Yes, scientists have been working with mRNA for decades, but it has failed in every previous attempt mm-hmm. to form a, quote, vaccine, sometimes with disastrous results where all of the test animals died, for example. It is fraught with problems, mm-hmm. and we are right now just seeing the tip of the iceberg on that. More importantly, Bernadette, I think they abdicated their sole responsibility in terms of managing public health. It is the role of public health to consider the impact of any particular mitigation scheme on the entire population, not just mm-hmm. a single disease process. Something mm-hmm. comes along, in this case, you know, a quote, novel coronavirus. You can't abandon everything and just focus on that. Mm-mm. Public health is mandated to consider the impact on all of the population and every bit of their health, not just this virus. You know, spiritual health, financial health, you know, all physical health, all yes. of these things. And instead, they crafted a response that left a smoldering crater where the economy used to be. They devastated mm-hmm. the livelihoods of hundreds of millions of people, a quarter mm-hmm. of a million children died globally because of food chain disruptions as a result of the lockdown. They destroyed the educational, terms of tens of millions of children in this country alone by the lockdown, and on and on and on. So that they truly botched the public health response in a way that is hard to really get your arms around.
Exactly. You know, and it's been a long time since I've showed the OpenVAERS data. This is a private website that somebody developed it and to go get the VAERS data and put it forward in a very readable way. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful to this individual who did this. If you're just radio only, I'm showing a slide of OpenVAERS, OpenVAERS.com. Go check it out. If you click on the COVID vaccine data, you end up with their famous now red boxes. So let's look at these products are still being promoted by public health agencies to the tune of billions of dollars of marketing money. The numbers are so staggering. It's just insane. So far for these COVID products, 1,630,1913 reports have been filed. 37,231 deaths reported following the shots. 214,906 hospitalizations. 154,245 urgent care visits. 242,537 doctor office visits, 10,767 cases of anaphylaxis, 17,688 cases of Bell's palsy, 69,936 people have reported they're permanently disabled following receipt of these shots. And I could go on and on and on with this, but I won't. I'll stop there. So that, I mean, they're absolutely, you know, when they first, the data first started trickling in, you know, we're like, oh, wow, there's been 100 deaths reported to VAERS. They've got to pull it off the market. Right. You know, oh, there's been 1,000. They've got to pull it off the market. Right. And it's like, and then to think that they're just going to let these numbers go and act as if it's just not there, the insanity of it.
Well, to put it in perspective, Bernadette, in 1976, when the swine flu vaccine was rolled out, and there were 25 reported possible associated deaths from that vaccine, it was pulled from the market, 25. Mm-hmm. Compare that to where we are now. And the reality is we knew from the beginning that this was going to be failed. And just full disclosure for your audience, I am not a, quote, anti-vaxxer. And frankly, I think the application of that moniker is really disruptive because it's largely applied to shut down the conversation and to marginalize people. What I am is pro-safety and pro-science. I am probably more vaccinated than the average individual because of what I've done for a living and where I've chosen to travel. I've had some unusual vaccines like for yellow fever that the average person wouldn't have. That said, we have got to take a very hard look at what we are doing with vaccines in general, and I'm hoping we can talk a little bit about that. With regard to these shots, I have a hard time even calling them vaccines. They are actually genetic therapy. mRNA is not a classic vaccine platform at all. It was fraught with problems, as I said. Even the lipid nanoparticles that are contained within them, the small sort of fat globule, if you will, that helps to deliver the genetic mRNA material, that is, you know, carcinogenic, has a host of reproductive system complications associated with it. So we knew that this was going to be problematic in the first place. Then get into the idea that why do you think we've never come up with a successful vaccine for a coronavirus in the past? Well, it's because coronaviruses, very, very common, 26-28% of all common colds are caused by coronaviruses. They mutate very, very quickly. All viruses mutate, but coronaviruses are particularly adept at it. They do it more quickly than others. And the area of the virus that's most likely to mutate is that spike protein. So when they first announced that they were going to come up with an mRNA shot predicated on the spike protein, I said, that is not going to work. It's going to fail, and it's going to fail immediately. And mm-hmm. lo and behold, it did, because that spike protein mutates very, very quickly. So this whole thing, I believe, had nothing to do with trying to prevent COVID-19 and everything to do with trying to, as I said, make mRNA appear to be a household word, very safe, very common, and to get people to take shot after shot after shot so that they would become accustomed to it.
Exactly. You nailed it. Right on. I'd like to move a little bit back on the first hour on our health hour. We were talking mm-hmm. about measles. And as you said, you're not anti-vaccine, but I think you've made it very clear that what happened in COVID really awakened you to regulatory capture in a way that maybe you were not aware of before. But
absolutely.
What do you know?
Yeah. Well, to put a little, you know, color on it, when I was growing up, and I don't want to date myself, but when I was growing up, the average number of vaccines on the childhood, you know, that on the childhood schedule, meaning from birth to age 18, was between 6 and 8, depending on where you live in the country. Mm-hmm. If you look at that number now, between birth and age 18, it is now 72. We've mm-hmm. gone from 6 to 8 to 72. Why? Largely because of the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act that was passed mm-hmm. in 1986 that gave blanket immunity to the pharmaceutical companies for their production of vaccines. It is huge business. So now we are vaccinating kids over and over and over and over again for a multitude of diseases, many of which are frankly not that serious. You also might ask yourself why, for example, a newborn baby needs to be vaccinated against hepatitis B, a bloodborne and sexually transmitted disease. Why would you give that to a newborn baby, you know, days or, you know, hours sometimes, you know, out of the womb? So, you know, the vaccine, what we are doing with vaccines is highly problematic. Vaccinology by itself is very complex. The human immune system is the last great frontier of medicine. It doesn't always respond the way we think it's going to. Sometimes it takes years to understand what that response is going to be. Furthermore, we, you know, at some point, we have got to get back to the basics of health and wellness. And by that, I mean good nutrition, regular mm-hmm. exercise, adequate sleep, stress mitigation, social support, and stop trying to vaccinate and or medicate our way out of every single illness. Mm-hmm. You know, the human immune system is meant, it's an incredible system, very, very robust, and we should be focusing on keeping that immune system and response healthy and robust rather than saying, oh, we will treat everything, we can vaccinate our way out of everything. If you look at the incredible host of illnesses that we have, certainly in this country and around the globe, we have exponential rates not only of autism, but also of autoimmune diseases, allergies, and other things that are likely the direct result of this constant flogging of the immune system that we are doing by injection after injection after injection.
Right, exactly. You probably know, I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you know who Charles Richet is? R-I-C-H-E-T?
I don't. Okay. I don't.
1903, he won the Nobel Prize for coining the term and doing research on something he called anaphylaxis. And he coined the term because he was studying what happened to a certain percentage of individuals when they were injected with a hypodermic needle. And instead of whatever they were injected with being a prophylaxis, being protective, these individuals suffered anaphylaxis. And, then the next exposure to that product, it made them allergic. They had a, you know, an over response. So it just amazes me that it's not something that everybody knows from age 5 and up, that anaphylaxis is something that can happen, or allergic response or even autoimmune response when you inject people. It's just, this has been known and won a Nobel Prize since 1903. The other thing I want to point out that is little known about the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act is it not only covered vaccine makers for injury and death of their products when the CDC recommends that's how they get under the umbrella, for children and also pregnant women and their unborn children were thrown under this umbrella under the 21st Century Cures Act, but it also shields health providers, those who inject vaccines.
Yeah.
And so that I think was more dangerous really than even the vaccine giving it to the manufacturers. Mm-hmm. I want them both to go away because the recklessness with which pediatricians will add vaccines to a schedule, if all they have to do to be considered having given informed consent is to prior to the child getting a vaccine, they have to hand over the federally mandated vaccine information sheet.
Right.
You know, they have to verify. They don't know. Doctors aren't even taught this. They don't care because they feel like they're shielded. But they have to verify the parent understands what's on that sheet before they then give informed consent and then receive the product. But since you can't sue them, you know, it's just, and they're financially incentivized to give them. It was, very dangerous, very dangerous.
Well, if you look at, these current shots, these mRNA shots for COVID, known as COVID vaccines, as I sit here today, March 29th, 2024, there still is not a single FDA-approved mRNA shot for COVID available in the United States. They are all still only available under the emergency use authorization. Now, I might ask you, exactly what emergency are we having? I'm an emergency specialist. Please tell me, what is the emergency that we are supposedly having with COVID that would even allow us to have those on the market under an emergency use authorization? Furthermore, these are by definition, because they're only available under the EUA, by definition, they are still experimental. Now, it's very clear we have well codified, understanding in the Nuremberg Code that you cannot compel, mandate, or otherwise under fear of reprisal, coerce someone to participate in a medical experiment. These are experimental. The very idea that we mandated to anyone, let alone our military or healthcare providers, or anybody else, that they had to participate in this experiment in order to keep their jobs is absolutely unconscionable. I truly feel that we have lost our collective minds when people are not up at arms. I keep saying, where are the, our bodies, our choice, people? Where are the people? I have a host of people in my personal circle who would not think to give their child, a genetically modified food product or a non-organic carrot, yet they were the first to rush them in there, roll up their sleeves, and give them an experimental genetic therapy. We have got to get our arms around this and make sure that this never happens again. I hate to say, but I firmly believe we have only seen the tip of the iceberg with regard to the negative impact we're going to see from these shots. We're, seeing the, very concerning uptick in cancers. We're seeing, obviously, the myocarditis and sudden deaths and those things that get a lot of press. But the next decade of cancers, autoimmune, diseases and neurologic issues, I think is going to be a tsunami of pain and suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. And just to jump in regarding the EUA, so one of the reasons that Comirnaty is not FDA approved is that there is no legal basis under EUA for FDA to authorize any of its use. EUA is considered a countermeasure. It's not a vaccine. Mm-hmm. It's not a medical product. It's considered a countermeasure. So under EUA, one of the reasons that they have to keep EUA on board is that it allows, under those regulations, the dispersion of countermeasures. So it's not a medical product. And as a matter of fact, FDA had no regulatory authority to review a countermeasure. They only have authority for biologics, vaccines, and medical products. It was never categorized as that, but it was certainly marketed as that.
Mm-hmm.
The FDA has stated, and it's somewhere on their website, that the difference between Pfizer's EUA COVID shot and their supposedly licensed Comirnaty shot, that they were pretty much the same. It was only a legal distinction, but they admitted there was a legal distinction, and they're only having the vials of EUA made available in the United States, which are legally distinct. Where are the vials labeled Comirnaty out there that you can sue Pfizer about?
Yeah, well, and that's exactly the point. This was sleight of hand by the FDA. They are two distinct products. The EUA product, BioNTech, which is under the emergency use authorization, and the one that is branded as Comirnaty. The reason they did that was twofold. Number one, it was to allow people to use up their stockpile of the EUA product and not have to waste all of that. And number two, any product that is available under the emergency use authorization, wait for it, gives blanket immunity to the manufacturer. Okay. They cannot be sued. So you cannot sue the pharmaceutical company for a product that has been made available only under the emergency use authorization. That's why they are so frantic to get it on. We're so frantic to get it on the childhood vaccine schedule, because they know that eventually the emergency use will drop off. The EUA will drop off, and those companies would have some liability exposure. Once it's on the childhood vaccine schedule, then again, they have blanket immunity under the childhood vaccination program. So this was sleight of hand, nothing less, by the FDA.
So Kelly and Javier, I want to ask the latest booster that they have out there that is being called, you know, they say that it's licensed for 12 and older, that the shots, anything given to children is still EUA. Is it still with this new formulation? And it's being called Comirnaty, but is it still, though, if I were to go look at the FDA documentation on the latest one, would it call it an EUA or would it call it a licensed?
It's EUA. It's EUA. And if you looked at the vial, it does not say Comirnaty on it. It's asked to look at the vial. This is absolutely fraudulent as far as I'm concerned. This is criminal behavior. They are only available under the EUA. This is not an FDA approved product. It doesn't say Comirnaty on the vial. People are not getting informed consent. And on top of it, the shots don't work. We have a huge study out of the Cleveland Clinic that shows the more heavily vaccinated, quote unquote, you are for COVID, the more likely you are to get COVID. In order to have an emergency use in the first place, the shot or the therapy has to be at least 50% effective. It fell below that threshold within a matter of weeks. It was initially, quote, 97% effective. These are the original shots. Then it dropped to 72%, then below 50% within a matter of weeks. There's no legitimate reason these can continue to have the emergency use authorization stamp on them. They are simply overlooking. They are not following the law. This is wrong on so many levels. I mean, truly, it's just beyond the pale.
Beyond. Go ahead, Javier.
And then Secretary of Health, Javier Becerra, continues to regularly reinstate the public health emergency on a 30-day rolling basis. So this is something that is ongoing. It's part of a policy because it's there to protect, quote, the warm capacity to produce vaccines and other biotechnology for the United States and the military. That's the only reason it's being updated. Held. The moment that another administration comes in and shuts it down, Pfizer and Moderna are done as companies. They are done.
Yeah.
Wow. Javier, I think we've got the wrong Javier sitting in that office. I think we need to do a little switch do our own bait and switch.
No, thank you. No, I don't want that job.
You don't want that job. Oh, you'd be so good at it. He's a PhD in neurobiology, and he's just a great man, great ethics. It's just a pleasure and honor to work with him on this show. I started to scroll toward, because the first hour is about measles. So as an emergency and trauma doc, what's your experience been over the years with measles? What are your thoughts about measles, the dangers of measles? What do you think about the shots?
Well, again, I am not against all vaccines. I think the MMR, the measles shot, vaccine, which is a traditional vaccine, did a good job. Obviously, we eliminated measles, which meant in 2000 as a result of those shots, which means it isn't constantly present. That's different from eradicating something like smallpox. Yeah. We eliminated measles. It's not constantly present. We do have regular small outbreaks. And again, back when we were getting, a handful of true standard vaccines from the age of, from birth to 18, I think there was a role for it. The outbreaks that we're seeing now, again, are not particularly overwhelming. We've had 64, I think, reported cases in the United States so far this year, over 17 different states. Most of them are associated with an outbreak in Chicago at a migrant shelter. They're largely amongst non-vaccinated children. A few of them are kids who were technically vaccinated but had a breakthrough case. There's no question that measles can cause some very serious side effects. Some kids will develop pneumonia. Some kids will develop encephalitis and have neurologic complications. About 1 out of 1,000 kids who develops a neurologic complication will end up dying from it. So it's not without some toll. I think the problem is that we, as I said at the beginning, are over-vaccinating. There's nothing in medicine that doesn't boil down to a risk-benefit calculation, meaning understanding the risks from a particular disease weighed against the possible risks and benefits of any intervention, not just vaccines. I don't care if it's surgery, an antibiotic, a statin drug for cholesterol. And they've lost that. We are no longer doing that calculation because vaccines are such big business, and the pharmaceutical agencies, there's companies stand to make billions and billions of dollars. And why wouldn't you when you have absolutely no liability?
Market.
Right. You don't have to market. You don't have to do any marketing because it's on the schedule. Okay. You have to do limited amounts of testing, and you have all the money that you would normally spend on liability protection. You don't have that either. So it all falls to the bottom line. It's a great business model. They're vaccinating people against, things that you otherwise don't necessarily need to. And as I said, the data are pretty overwhelming on how bad some of these are. The Gardasil, for example, the HPV, the human papillomavirus vaccine, we now have studies out showing that if you actually already had HPV, and many people who are vaccinated with Gardasil already had HPV, it actually increases your risk of developing a genital cancer. So these are things that really we have gotten out way over our skis on these things. So people would happily label me as Kelly Victory, the anti-vaxxer. That is not the case. What I'm saying is it's one thing to have vaccinated people against chickenpox or against measles, and another thing to be doing them with the frequency, the rapidity, and this blanket need for every single thing that comes out. We need to have a vaccine for it. The average person isn't at risk from RSV. I've never gotten an influenza vaccine in my life. They're not very good, and a good year, it might cover, 30% of the strains. In a bad year, it's almost useless. I know that my God-given immune system, kept at tip-top shape, will do a really good job at fighting it off. I don't want to be sick in bed for 7 days. but I know I'll be able to handle it. And likewise, unless you're in that small group that has a well-known comorbidity that puts you at significant risk, I think we really need to back off on these. We're not just over-vaccinating kids, we're over-vaccinating our animals. So I have a lot of four-leggers that I really have dialed way back on the number and frequency of vaccines for.
Yeah. Oh, I would agree. And I've told this story before. I remember talking with a legislator out in Washington State, and we had a bill that would allow for titer testing before you got like a rabies booster, because they over vaccinate. And this particular legislator was really excited about the bill. He says, yeah, my wife loves her little dogs and she's going to love to see this. She's concerned that they're getting too many vaccines.
Yeah.
So he set that aside and we hand him the next bill that we were hoping he would put his name on and get behind. And it was titer testing for human babies to see if you've already got the titers, you know, and it was something that already existed in the law that you could test for titers in children. And if it came back that you had enough, it satisfied a vaccine requirement. This was just a bill that would have told that you had to, public health would have to begin telling people of the existence of the titer option. Because people didn't know.
Right.
You never saw a person doing about face so quick from being all sparkly and excited. He was like we just presented kryptonite to Superman. Mm-hmm. And he looks at his watch. Oh, I got an appointment. Gotta go. Right. And it was so odd because there's something so psychological that has been infiltrated for decades into society that to say anything critical about human vaccines, it's so stigmatizing, especially for legislators who get lobbied so heavily by public health and the industry that they just don't want to go there. And COVID, though, has brought all of this bubbling to the surface, and more people are willing to stand up. Now, when you stand up and you're critical on one aspect of one vaccine, you're suddenly an anti-vaxxer. So I've come to the conclusion that if you are not being labeled an anti-vaxxer, you're not paying attention.
Yeah.
And you're doing something wrong, because even if you do not believe in mandatory vaccine, if that's it, you just don't believe they should be mandatory, you're an anti-vaxxer in their
book. The problem, Burnett, really, it goes even deeper than that. And you were just starting to touch on it. The pharmaceutical industry has infiltrated every component of our society. They are a huge lobbying group in Washington. They own the mainstream media. They're the single biggest advertiser. You know, Fox News has, you know, they're the, you know, supposedly one of the conservative news outlets. 70% of their advertising dollars comes from the pharmaceutical industry. Roger Ailes, before he died, wanted to get rid of pharmaceutical advertising on their network, but couldn't afford to do it because it represented 70% of it. Mm-hmm. They own the storied medical journals, The Lancet, JAMA, the British Medical Journal, the journals that I went to and thought I was actually going to the source, reading the study. I, you know, patted myself on the back saying, I'm the girl who's going to go and read the study. Little did I know when I was doing that for decades that fundamentally I was reading the marketing arm for the pharmaceutical companies, because they own those journals. Mm-hmm. Nothing's going to get published unless it comes to the conclusion that the pharmaceutical company wants. The United States is only one of two countries in the world that allows pharmaceutical advertising on television. Mm-hmm. New Zealand is the other one. Other countries don't even allow it, specifically because if they know if pharma owns the advertising dollars, they own the media. And God help you try to get unfiltered or really unbiased reporting. So this is a huge problem. We have got to disarticulate the cozy relationship that the pharmaceutical industry has with the media, social media, our storied medical journals, and our academic institutions.
Amen. So you, two things I want to talk about just real briefly is Children's Health Defense's initiative, Reform Pharma Now, or Reform Pharma, go to reformpharmanow.org. This is the mission of this initiative, is to to get rid of that corruption of the of the whole pharmaceutical industry in everything that you just named. So reformpharmanow.org. Sign up to get free newsletters to hear from them and find out then, you know, as this project gets underway, where you can take action where you are to help this, you know, everywhere you are, it takes all of us. You know, one of the easiest things that you can do is get healthy, because if you stop buying their products, you stop feeding the monster.
Right.
So encourage folks to do that. But Javier, if you're listening here, pop in and tell Dr. Kelly about the new journal and the new ethics committee, if you don't mind.
Yes. So Science, Public Health Policy, and the Law is a journal that IPAC runs and maintains, as well as manages the editorial and peer review process. So, for example, Peter McCullough, Jessica Rose, Paul Thomas, Dr. Henry Ely, they all published there. They all published the these landmark papers that revealed the the inappropriate labeling of COVID cases as positive if they had positive PCR tests, and the rising cases of myocarditis, as well as showing the healthy outcomes from a population of unvaccinated children versus their vaccinated cohorts. Right. Those would have never been published, and in many cases, a lot of the studies are retracted from mainstream journals. Science, Public Health Policy, and the Law provided a space. And now there is a new initiative under IPAC that's called the World Society for Ethical Science, which is there to guarantee and provide a space for people that actually practice and use ethics in the application of science and medicine to have a space where they can actually do that safely and be supported in their causes.
Yeah. It's so important, Javier. Truly, I think until we get to that, you know, I've been in my own existential crisis during this pandemic, because I wonder what are the other things that I did based on journal articles that I believed were truly in support of the science that actually weren't. I had a conversation interview some months ago with Bobby Kennedy on a show. And one of the things he said that I loved was that if he were elected, he would call the editors of all of the major medical journals into his office and tell them if they didn't disarticulate and end their relationship with the pharmaceutical companies that are supporting the journals, that he would bring a RICO case against them, because it truly is racketeering. I thought it was a brilliant approach. It is would be called racketeering in any other industry, that the pharmaceutical agencies pay the journals to, you know, to publish the studies that show, you know, in support of their drugs. You know, then you look at things like the CDC. We have people at the CDC, including Anthony Fauci, you know, Dr. Science himself, you know, who owns parts of patents on shots that they are then mandating that people have to take. I mean, this is the definition of corruption. That, you know, this is the definition of, you know, lack of independence and conflict of interest. You know, if somebody, you know, died and made me queen, I would make every journal article have to disclose, you know, who paid for it above the title of the article. So I could decide if I even want to read it, because if the article or the study is bought and paid for by somebody who's got, you know, a skin in the game, that's problematic. So I think it's fantastic news to hear that we are, you know, that there's a parallel system of journals and where we can get true, unadulterated, unbiased science out there and allow people like myself and physicians and people to actually avail themselves of all of that. During this pandemic alone, the number of colleagues who I had who were unable to get a study published because it didn't, or the fact that the FDA, you know, was allowed to do a out and out hit job on, say, ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. And thank goodness with the recent ruling, they had to capitulate. The FDA got more than a wrist slap and had to acknowledge that they what they posted was misinformation, disinformation. And they had to take it down. You know, of course, they didn't admit any, quote, wrongdoing, but I think you can pretty easily read between the lines. But we can't allow this to happen.
That's correct. And just on another note, IPAC has an IRB set up. So they are now, they've gone through the entire regulatory hurdle, and they're now a licensed IRB. So they can actually provide IRB oversight for anyone that wants to do a study, including a vaxxed, unvaxxed analysis.
That's exciting. For full disclosure, we will let everybody know that Javier is the vice president of the new, tell us the name of it again.
World Society for Ethical Science.
Yeah. And I've been so buried in what's going on here in Tennessee with the legislative session still open. I don't have that memorized on my brain, but I will, because I have had the honor of being invited to be like a layperson on like an oversight committee for the ethics panel. You know, so I just think that is so cool, because that it just really shows that those who are developing this understand that the average mama bear person on the ground, the person who really is most impacted by whatever policy ever gets developed and can see things, that we don't have the tunnel vision. Well, I guess we have tunnel vision in protecting our children, but we really understand that side of it. So having our voices heard and having us be there to overview how we see things, I think is fantastic. And it goes to show, you know, the wonderful ethics of the individuals starting all this. We're down to like the last 2 minutes. My goodness.
Oh my gosh.
Dr. Kelly Victory, please tell people watching where they can find you if they want to hear more from you.
Well, my only social media platform is Twitter, now X. I'm at Dr. Kelly Victory, and I do post there regularly and try to respond to people's comments when I can. I have just very excited to announce that I've just joined the chief medical board for the wellness company
as
the chief of emergency and disaster medicine. And I'm thrilled to be, it's a great group. And they are some of the true thought leaders in medicine and healthcare, and truly dedicated to forming a parallel system that puts really prioritizes the health and wellness of individuals over the profits of the medical pharmaceutical complex. So very excited about that. I am a contributing author to a book called Toxic Shot that's going to come out next month. Written with people like Harvey Reich and Byron Brindle and Ryan Cole, Peter McCullough, and others, Jessica Rose, and others who you know well. And then I spend a lot of time doing shows like these. I am a regular on the show with Dr. Drew. I host with him and host in his absences frequently. So I'm all over on media, but social media is Twitter at Dr. Kelly Victory, and my new position at the wellness company.
Oh, congratulations on that. It's so exciting. And you're speaking at the Spokane event.
I am. Oh, yes. Yes, I will be up there on, I think it's Friday the 19th. Really looking forward to that at the Children's Health Defense event in Spokane on the 19th. And then the next day at the Medical Freedom Forum with Sean Needham.
That's excellent. And people like Scott Jensen and just, oh, yes. I'm so excited about the future possibilities of where all of this is going. Dr. Kelly Victory, thank you so much for joining us on the Liberty Hour Inform Life Radio. I hope you'll return.
Thank you for having me. I'd be happy to be back anytime.
Yeah, you're welcome. There's say goodbye to Javier. You've been listening to the Liberty Hour on 1150 AM KKNW and CHD TV. Hey, Bob, everybody have a great Easter weekend.
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
Are you suffering from a sinking feeling that the COVID-19 pandemic is being blown out of proportion and that nothing in the news is making any sense? If so, then there is a fact-based, science-driven news show designed just for you. My name is Del Bigtree, and I am the host of The High Wire, the world's most trusted news source in digital media when it comes to accurate, science-based reporting on the COVID-19 pandemic. From COVID-19 vaccine development to mask mandates, school shutdowns to job layoffs, The High Wire goes beyond providing you with the most accurate, evidence-based investigations. We send you links to the sources for all of our reporting so that you can further your own investigation and come to your own informed conclusions. High above the agenda-driven circus of mainstream media, we do not run. We do not hide from the truth. Instead, we walk the high wire. If you care about truth, then join us on Instagram, Twitter, Roku, and our website, thehighwire.com.
Informed Choice Washington is a nonprofit organization that advocates for healthy immunity, medical freedom, and fully informed medical consent. The right to make medical choices without coercion is fundamental to our civil liberties and a basic principle in all human rights declarations. To learn more, tune in each Friday from 3 to 5 p.m. to An Informed Life Radio and visit the website informedchoicewa.org. It's time to take a stand for medical freedom. Go to informedchoicewa.org. Today.
The information contained in this episode is for informational purposes only. No material is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.